Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and gators and grannies, to the Sunday afternoon edition of The Big Puzzle. My name is Barry Prince, coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia, broadcasting through People's Internet Radio and being simulcast on ShakingWakeRadio.com. We are a viewer-supported station, guys, so if you like what the stations are doing, please reach into your back pocket and pull out a couple bucks and throw it at the station. They would really appreciate that. And thanks to Stephen Roberts, of course. I like to say this at the beginning of the show because I always forget the end. Thanks, Stephen, for producing the shows. I know there's things he'd rather be doing today, but here he's taking his time to get my voice out there. So much applause to Stephen for what he's doing. I'm joined by Mark Friesen today, and I'm sure you guys are familiar with Mark. I've had him on my show
Barry,
in the past.
Barry,
and,
can I interrupt you?
Yes. Hello?
It sounds like you're about 5 foot away from your microphone. Did you do something different?
No, I didn't. I can maybe try and turn up my volumes if that works.
No, you don't need to turn the volume up. It just sounds like you're a long ways away.
Okay, is that any better?
No, but just go ahead and continue.
Well, I don't know what to say there. I'm trying to speak right into my microphone. This is an expensive $49 headset. I just don't understand what's going on. One of these days I'll get really sophisticated and get myself a proper microphone, but in the meantime, you're just going to have to bear with me. But anyways, I am joined by Mark Friesen today, and I really enjoyed my conversations with Mark in the past. Mark was a candidate for the People's Party of Canada this year in Saskatoon, and had a good writing and a good run at it, but fortunately, powers to be behind the curtains, I think, really influenced our election in Canada. We're not going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about the global warming scam. And I know Mark is very, very educated on this subject, and it's something I wanted to talk today. Might end up going other places, but this is what I was going to start my conversation with today. How are you doing, Mark, and welcome to the show.
I'm good. Thanks for having me on again, Barry. I'm sitting in my home office here. I'm still trying to come down from the campaign, from the election. Of course, for a lot of us, it was a 13-month campaign, not a 35-day campaign. So I'm still sort of coming down from that, but marching forward with trying to get as much information to the masses as absolutely possible. So I appreciate the opportunity to come on your show as well.
Cool. It's always good to have you. So let's talk about this global warming scam that's being played on the human race here, Mark. I mean, I've seen some scams in the past, and the more I look into it, the more I actually research what is going on this planet, the more I understand it's the biggest charade that's ever been played on the universe. Would I be correct in saying that?
Yeah, you know, it's mind-boggling, to be quite honest, how they've been able to, you know, manufacture this narrative that CO2 is creating climate change. You know, it's we've seen, like you mentioned, through history, a lot of, you know, different governments usually that are able and have this ability to convince people of things that are just essentially not true. But this mob mentality, this group think that that they've been able to tap into is, you know, from a sociological standpoint, it's really, really interesting that you can convince so many people to buy into something that is so obviously wrong. Like to say and suggest that CO2 is a pollutant or a poisonous gas and demonize it to the level that they've managed to demonize CO2 is really interesting from a sociological perspective. From a policy perspective, it's extremely frustrating and angering because, I mean, we all went to school, we all went to elementary school, at least most of us, and we all went to high school, and we learned that CO2 is a fundamental building block of all life on Earth. And, you know, in the last number of, call it 25 years, they've managed to turn that basic education on its ear and create this hysteria on CO2. I mean, you know, with CO2, again, I'm no scientist, I'm no expert, but, you know, I need to understand things. I need to understand what's happening. I need to understand, you know, so people talk about CO2 and they talk about it being, you know, a leading cause to climate change. So a number of things come to mind. first of all, the climate has always changed. And the day that the climate doesn't change is the day that we should panic. So we're not seeing anything. You know, they try to use all of these examples like, you know, polar bears are dying, which was debunked there. Ice is melting and the seas are rising. Well, the seas are rising very minimally. Banks are giving loans to people on coast of Florida, knowing full well that it's not going to rise to the point that the politicians are trying to scare people to believe. So you have all of these situations that they create out of nothing to exacerbate the fear and ultimately to promote the idea that CO2 is bad and it's creating climate change. And so what do these governments do, including Canadian government, including both parties, both establishment, is they use that fear to extract as much wealth from the West as possible, because that's where the wealth is to extract. And so who do you focus on? You focus on folks throughout the Western world, and you convince them that paying a tax to reduce emissions is somehow going to save the planet. It's just insanity.
But it's amazing the power of mind control. It really blows me away that people can't take an hour of their own time and research and look into this. And when they do,
and they know that, you know, the purveyors of this scam know that. They know that people generally don't investigate things themselves. They don't. I mean, this is something so base. You know, that everyone knows that CO2 is part of photosynthesis. We learned that in school, probably grade 7. And so we know that CO2 is a fundamental building block of all life on Earth. Without it, we all die. So, but you see, the problem is this movement, and I call it a movement because that's exactly what it is, towards socialism on a global scale, is helped and pushed by, of course, Hollywood and your media, who is, you know, who's owned these, whether it's Hollywood or the news media, it's all owned by a few people that are part of this agenda. And so you have education, which has been completely infiltrated with Marxist and with this leftist ideation. So, you know, it's very hard for people like myself and yourself and others to come back and oppose this. I mean, we've seen scientists throughout the world, PhDs, you know, in astrophysics and climatology and eco degrees. They're completely vilified if they oppose this narrative. And we're seeing more of it. I'm actually becoming more and more hopeful because I'm seeing more and more scientists say, you know what? No, we got to back off. This is getting crazy. This is clown world now. So I'm starting to see it sort of shift a little bit. And I don't know what your experience is on the ground, but I know with mine, if I talk to, you know, people I know and my friends and my family, they all seem to get it. They all seem to understand that something doesn't sound right. How do we, you know, even on a basic level, how do we solve the climate issue by giving the government more money, right? I mean, that's at a base level. And even that's hard for most people that I come in contact with to understand. And so one of the problems that I see is even if people that are talking about or complaining about, you know, a carbon tax, for example, they complain about the issue, but nobody talks about where it came from and why it exists. The why is the most important thing. I just watched I think it was about an hour and a half, 2 hour discussion with Mark Stein and a few other pretty smart individuals. I posted on my Facebook, and I mean, a great discussion, great debate, but through the whole thing, I kept getting frustrated because they weren't actually going to the reason why there is this climate hysteria, why they've created a carbon tax. And it's really easy to discover what the why is. I mean, the UN has posted in 2012 already, they posted their agenda and how they're using carbon tax to raise funds to pay for sustainable development agenda. They were open about it. It's not a secret. We have we have ex-IPCC commissioners or general secretaries of the IPCC openly stating on a number of different occasions that the whole climate agenda is part of and use to fund the overall agenda, which is not – they've even said it themselves. It's not about changing the climate or fixing climate change. It's actually to change the system from a capitalist system to a socialist system. I mean, they've openly admitted it. And, you know, you tell people this and they – it's such a stark contrast to what they hear on the news and what they see in, you know, their everyday lives that they find it hard to believe. Even though you can show them, this is what the UN is telling us. It's not me. I'm not saying this. But it's that sort of thing doesn't fit the narrative. And that's, you know, the mainstream will never promote those things. I mean, I'll ask you and I'll ask your listeners. When was the last time you heard a mainstream news organization, whether it's local, regional or national, talk about the sustainable development agenda? The answer will be they never have. And they haven't. You haven't heard any of our politicians, whether federal, provincial, or local, speak specifically to the UN Sustainable Development Agenda or talk about the subgroups that are initiated in different, like, for instance, ICLEI in throughout, you know, different cities. I think there's over 1,800 of them now throughout the world. Your local municipal governments don't tell you about that. They don't tell the people why they're making the decisions they're making. They just say this is what's best for our city, right? And they try to convince people that a 3.7% tax increase for the next year is the right thing to do. And a $19 billion, quote-unquote, master plan for Saskatoon, for example, is the right thing to do. $19 billion for a city of less than 300,000 people. So it's all connected to this bigger, you know, and their words, not mine, master plan. And so we have a colossal job ahead of us trying to get the word out and trying to educate people. But I really do believe that the whole climate hysteria, the whole climate scam is the linchpin. As we can see, since the states has pulled out of Paris and pulled out of a lot of these UN agenda items, they are losing money. They're hemorrhaging funds. And I've seen it over the last 6 months at least twice where the UN has come forward saying that they're running out of money. And almost simultaneously, we see another push to this climate hysteria and that countries need to increase their emissions reductions through carbon tax and carbon pricing. And where's that money going? Well, it's going to fund the UN and its agenda, right? So that's why we see this, you know, on one hand, the UN's out of money. And then on the next hand, we see Greta Thunberg traveling to North America to promote, you know, climate hysteria. So, you know, I really think that this whole climate scam is the linchpin. And if we can destroy that narrative and somehow get that narrative to the masses, I mean, that's a huge accomplishment against the overall agenda. Does that mean it's going to stop? No, because they're socialist communists. They'll never stop. Are you still there? Can you hear me?
He's muted.
Oh.
Or he did something with his Skype settings.
Yeah, I'm not getting anything back from him.
Neither am I.
I guess he thought I was never going to shut up. Or maybe he did have to go to the bathroom.
No. You are muted. You've done something with your microphone. You've done something with your settings in your microphone. You better put it back. That's my fault, Mark.
No, it's all good.
I asked him to look into his Skype settings.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, it's all good.
Something's changed, and he hasn't gotten it back yet. It's in your Skype settings, Barry. Just drop off and come on back in. No need to start a new call. Come back. Okay. I don't even know if that's going to change. Okay.
Did that work?
You're back. Yes, you're back.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry about that, guys. Steve gets me doing stuff. Well, he gets me doing stuff in the middle of the show, and I'm trying to listen to you. And my, like I said, I get lost when I turn the computer on, guys. I'm the first one to admit it. So, anyways, it's all good. I'm back. And
I guess you heard everything I rambled about.
Well, I heard you. It wasn't a ramble. It was a great thought process there, Mark. But, you know, I read a report from the United Nations themselves that are telling us that if every country in the world conforms to the Paris Climate Accord, and does what they say they're going to do in the next 20 years, that we won't even get close to meeting the objectives of reducing the so-called rise in temperature that their computer models are projecting as 3.2 degrees by the year 2100.
Right.
Now, I've looked at all the computer models, and the computer models generated by the establishment, the guys behind the curtains, of course, all support this narrative. The only one that's accurate to actually what's going on right now and the temperatures on the planet Earth is the Russian models. So if you really want to get an idea of what's going on, guys, go take a look at the Russian models, because they're very accurate in what they're saying and what the projections are.
It's interesting when you talk about models, because they've all manipulated the models to suit their agenda rather than
creating
the agenda to suit the reality, right? So, there was a report that came out the IPCC came out with a report stating that by 2100, if we don't do anything, the planet temperature will raise by 3.2 degrees.
Right.
But if everyone commits, just like you mentioned, if everyone commits to this, then we'll be able to get it to 3 degrees.
Three degrees.
We're talking about 0.2 degrees. Right?
And trillions of dollars.
Yes. And total destruction of Western world and our economy. Canada is the perfect canary in the coal mine. We're seeing it happen. We're watching the destruction of not only oil and gas, that's a huge one, but it's not the only one, of many industries, farming, ranching, you know, even the automobile plants, fisheries, all of these industries that, you know, is the lifeblood to our economy here in Canada, just completely decimated. And why? Well, so the why is, again, the most important part of the equation. And the why is because it's a socialist redistribution of wealth scheme meant to suck as much wealth from the West as possible, so they can then they state it openly in the Sustainable Development Goals. I think it's number 10, where they want equality of all countries within and among. So they want to reduce the wealth in Western nations and any other nations that have wealth. They want to reduce that, and by doing that, their claim is that they're going to raise up all these other countries around the world. So we're all equal. What does that mean? Well, that means that we're going to reduce the living standard of all of these Western nations dramatically in order to support funding the raising of standard of living for all of these third and second world countries. And so there's many more of those than there are first world countries. And so when you're talking about equality, it's going to be dramatically reduced for the first world while negligibly increased for the third. So we're all equal. We're all equally poor and we're all equally controllable. That's the UN SDA in a nutshell.
That's
the end game. That's it. And then you have this global governance. And, you know, so I try to stay purposely. I stay away from catchphrases like New World Order or One World Government. I don't use them, not because they're not true, but because it's not receivable to most listeners, especially sleepy Canadians. That those two terms have been demonized so bad and so effectively turned into conspiracy theorists or theory that, you know, the left does a masterful job of setting narratives and setting labels. And so by using those terms, you actually turn off the ears. You may piss off the people that are in the echo chamber, but you turn off the ears of the people that we really need to hit. So I just call it global governance, and that's exactly what it is, and that's how it's promoted, because they want this central planning, right? And central planning equals socialism/communism, where you have this enormous global bureaucracy that wants to and already is. It's not that they want to. They're already doing it. They're already creating cookie cutter policy for countries around the world who have signed on to this. And so it's already in place, this global government. There isn't a specific formal institute or parliament set up. However, there is the campaign for a UN parliament. And that's still in the works, and they're still working towards that. So then you would have this essentially big brother to what the EU is, right? So you have the EU that is now making decisions for all the European countries, and we see how that's being responded to through Brexit and other countries saying, no, we don't want any part of this anymore. And so that's – but that's the idea on a global scale when we're talking about a UN parliament, even though we already have that global governance in place. Because – and then the other element to this comes in, and people like the Conservative Party and other, you know, parties that try to say that they're not as committed to the UN agenda as, say, the Liberal Party is. So they like to say, well, these agreements are non-binding. Well, what does it matter if they're non-binding if you've signed it? If you've agreed to it, then it doesn't need to be binding, right? And so the more we move to this system of global governance, the more power, you know, international law will have to supersede Canadian law or national sovereignty. And so the more we our parties and our governments agree to these agenda items, the more sovereignty we're ceding. It's not like the UN is coming in and taking our sovereignty. We're actually willfully, through electing these governments and these parties to govern, we're willfully ceding that sovereignty to the UN and to this global entity. And so, you know,
don't understand that, though, Mark. Most Canadians don't get that. They just don't get it.
No, and I think, you know, you talk to most mainstream sleepy Canadians, they still have this impression that the UN is there to, you know, it's for a good thing. And, I mean, initially, there's some argument and debate whether initially this plan was in place right from the start, or was it just created to actually promote peace and prosperity around the world? That's up for debate. And really, at this point, it doesn't matter. We know what they stand for now. We know what their position is now. We know what their agenda is now. So, and it's been that way for at least since the 60s, if not the 50s, when this first discussion of global governance came to be. Right. And so, and there's a lot of players that are involved, and I shouldn't say a lot. It's a small number, comparatively speaking and relatively speaking, of folks that are pushing this. Of course, you know, the Club of Rome in the late 60s, you know, they're the ones who sort of initiated or conceptualized the idea of sustainable development on a global basis. And then Canada's part, enter Maurice Strong, Papa Trudeau, appointed Maurice Strong. He's a liberal oil guy, and he's basically considered the father of sustainable development. And so, you know, we've seen this progression. If you look back, and you can, it's all there for everybody to see. It's no secret that this is when it started, late 60s, early 70s, and then it went through its development stage, and, you know, creating different, you know, aspects to it, and different sub agendas and different groups within the bigger group. And so we've seen this progression. And so at the end of the day, all of this needs money. It needs funding. It needs to be successful on their end. They need funding. They need tax dollars from the West. And I mean, we've sent billions upon billions annually to the UN above board. But what people don't understand is how much money we're sending to this agenda that isn't on the surface, that is below the board. And so, NGOs, that's where they come in. NGOs, there's 8,000 of them around the country that are benefiting from this agenda. So non-government organizations. And so it's much easier for a sitting government in Canada to give grants and to give tax breaks and subsidies to NGOs who are playing along and who are, you know, playing the same song as the UN agenda. And so that's another way that they funnel Canadian tax dollars to these groups that are then promoting the same agenda. So it's deep, it's dark, it's costly, it's destroying our country, it's completely ceding our sovereignty I actually get hesitant to getting too deep into it, because then, you know, people actually come to the point where they just don't believe it, because it's so destructive to what they're used to and what their perception is, that it's too much for them to absorb. It's too much for them to accept. And so we have to be careful. I have to be careful when I'm taking this message to the masses and not get too dark and too deep too quickly, because you'll just turn people right off. They don't want to accept it. They don't want to hear it. It's too much.
Yeah, I agree. Knock them right out of the bubble. They don't want to do it. Most people are still in the bubble. And like you said, Mark, a lot of people think the United Nations is still a good word. That's the power of mind control and the media. But if you really start looking into the United Nations and how they've been infiltrated, who's running the United Nations, the countries that are running the United Nations, their standards of humanitarian rights, countries like Saudi Arabia. I mean, we have some of the most benign nations in the world having a major voice in the United Nations. They've basically taken it over. And now this week we had the Canadian government support a resolution by North Korea. I mean, come on, guys. If this doesn't wake you up, we should talk about that, because that absolutely knocked me right off my chair, but it didn't, Mark, because that's what I expect from Justin Trudeau.
Right.
Because he's showing his true colors. But let's talk about that for a minute. That was pretty shocking to actually see that he broke a tradition that's been going on for how many years. We actually slapped our American neighbors right in the face.
Yeah, he did. And I'm actually surprised we haven't seen much of a response from Trump in that regard, unless I've missed something. But to be honest, I wasn't the least bit surprised. It was a sign, right? Obviously, it was a sign. Trudeau was communicating to the UN that, yes, we are on board. Yes, please give us that Security Council seat, because we want it desperately for whatever reason. So this is just a sign, because we have to understand who runs the UN. There isn't one person. We have Secretary General. He's a socialist out of Socialist International, Guterres. But he doesn't run the UN. He's a figurehead, just like all of these people. They're all just figureheads. Trudeau's a figurehead. He's a puppet. That's all he is. All of our, throughout the West, we have these puppets that are being, controlled by the people that nobody ever meets or sees or even knows their name. And so we have to look at who the UN is. We have to understand what makes up the UN and what makes up, who's creating these policies and do they have, Canada's best interest at heart. And I say that laughing because it is such a joke. But we have to understand that so there's this socialist movement that makes up most of the UN, this whole agenda. But then you have the Islamist movement, which makes up another part of the agenda. And they're working together as they have throughout history. They've worked together to, for this totalitarian, authoritarian system. Of course, one of them at some point will have to reign supreme, and of course each of them think that they will, and in most cases the Islamists end up reigning supreme when you have this unholy alliance. But you look at who makes up the UN, and it's 193 countries. Of that 193 countries, you have voting blocks. There's one voting block that supersedes all others, and that's called the G77, which is actually not 77, it's 133. So you have 133 countries out of the 193 that exist that make up the UN, which is all of the countries on the planet. And you have this group that's 133. Well, who is that group? Not one of them is a Western nation. This is a group of countries that are made up mostly third world despots and dictators. And so within that 133, who drives the agenda that they're pushing? Well, you have to look at the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, which, of course, is the all the Muslim states, every single one of them on the planet, that's 56 plus one Palestine. So they run the agenda of that power block. That 133 is owned by the OIC. Then you have to look at to see what, I mean, the OIC in themselves have declared. I mean, their motto is to safeguard Muslims throughout the world, essentially, and I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what their motto is. But who has control of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation? Well, the Muslim Brotherhood, because most of the Islamic nations, especially the Islamic nations that have the resources and have the money and the wealth, they're controlled by the Muslim Brotherhood, right? So the Muslim Brotherhood, we can say, looking through all these facts, that of those 133 countries of the G77, the Muslim Brotherhood has the control. And so what is the Muslim Brotherhood agenda? Well, that's a caliphate worldwide, globally. That's what they want. That's what their stated mission is. And so you know, you put that all together, so you have the Islamists and then you have the socialists, and those are the two that are creating all of the cookie cutter policies that are completely destroying Western civilization. No kidding, right? And so that's the big picture. That's what we're seeing. And they're using the UN Sustainable Development Agenda as the mechanism to destroy the West and to weaken the West. So eventually they can have this global governance and control that governance. And that's where we are today. And so I think it's a great conversation to have when we talk about climate hysteria and CO2 and climate change, because again, that is the linchpin, that is the mechanism for their funding this agenda. If we cut that off, then the rest of the agenda will fail, because they don't have the funding to support it. Now, does that mean they're going to stop? No, it doesn't. We need a leader. We need leaders throughout Western civilization to stand up and say, no, you know what? We're out of UN Sustainable Development Agenda. We're out. We're finished. We're going to take care of our own business and do what's in the best interest of the citizens of my country, whatever country that is. And that's what we need in Canada. And that's why this election for me was so important. And that's why I joined the People's Party, because it was the only party that had the core values and the foundation and the platform to actually do that, to actually pull us out of that sustainable development agenda, pull us out of the Paris Accord, pull us out of all of these agreements, these sub-agreements to the UNSDA. And so that's...
Like them or not, Trump has done that.
And so that's exactly it. And
we need it in Canada.
Exactly what Trump represents. And like you said, like him or not, you know, I wouldn't necessarily want to be friends with the guy. I don't like his personality. I don't care. Nobody should care about that vanity, about that surface stuff. What we should be caring about, and what most, at least 50%, maybe more, Americans care about, is their sovereignty and their nation and what's in their best interest, which is why they're supporting Trump, because that's exactly what he represents. He's told the UN on at least two occasions in a formal speech that he's done with them. He's done with ceding sovereignty. We're finished. And that was all in relation to the UN Global Governance and Sustainable Development Agenda. And he's denounced the Paris Accord. They're pulling it out. I think it's coming up here some date where they're going to be officially out of it. And that's what he represents. And that's encouraged other countries to wake up as well. So we've seen this flood of other countries denouncing the UN agenda. So you have Austria, Hungary, Italy, Britain with Brexit and Poland, and, you know, Iceland, they're a little different. They actually discovered the corruption within their government and brought down their government, sort of not even understanding why, but they still did it because the corruption was so apparent. But we're seeing this populist movement now. We see it in Brazil, and we see it. There was just another one I saw the other day here where they voted for a right-wing populist. I can't remember the country offhand, so I won't say it. But so it's happening, and nations are getting it. Now, of course, Canada is always late to the table. They're always late to the party for whatever reason. I mean, part of it's because we're such a big country, and different regions have different issues, and it's hard to unite and whatever. So, but we will get there. I'm confident that we'll get there. I'm confident that people will wake up. Enough of us will wake up. And I think even in the East, when, you know, our transfer payments and equalization starts to dry up, then they're going to start to feel the pain as well. And, you know, sooner or later, I believe that they'll wake up. I think our country will wake up. It's just we're late bloomers.
Well, they're going to have to wake up pretty quick, because our country's in a lot of trouble, Mark. You know that. Our economy is on a slide like I've never seen before. This government's absolutely decimating all major economies in Canada. And
well,
it's
you know,
your time here, the general public's really going to start to feel the effects of it.
You're right, and we will feel pain. But you know, at the end of the day, from a negative or positive perspective, Canada does not have a lot of influence on the world stage, on the global stage, at the UN. We're just a country of 37 million people who happen to live in a country with an enormous amount of land, an enormous amount of resources that our governments continually sell off to other world actors. And so we're sort of at the mercy of a global movement. Now, that doesn't mean that we sit back and we just wait for somebody else to save our ass. No, we have to be proactive. We have to educate people. We have to get them to understand. And when that time comes, and for every individual it's different, but when that time comes where the light bulb goes on, they'll already have that information. They'll already say, oh, you know what? I remember this discussion that they heard on Barry Prince's show or on Mark Friesen's Facebook or YouTube or whatever, that they'll be able to make those connections. They'll be able to make and understand what the hell's going on, and this will happen. And it's inevitable. It's a natural progression. It's just, you know, Canadians, for whatever reason, are a little slower on the pickup, and there's a lot of reasons that contribute to that. But at the end of the day, I'm hopeful, and it will happen, but there's going to be pain before it does. There absolutely has to be, because nobody acts, especially in Canada, nobody does anything until it's usually too late or it's well in. I mean, it is. Albertans are waking up pretty quickly. They're starting to feel it, and they've for a while now. People in Saskatchewan are waking up. But again, they look at it from an insular perspective, like this is affecting me. Even the pipelines. I mean, I went on a yellow vest convoy, which was then turned not yellow vest, and it was a United We Roll convoy to Ottawa. And the whole time we were on this convoy, the conversation between myself and Glenn, who was the organizer of it, was this that we're having now. And I'm trying to impress upon Glenn that, yes, pipelines are extremely important, but we have to understand that there's a bigger thing at play here that's creating the attack on pipelines and the attack on energy industry. We have to understand that it's connected to a bigger agenda. And so that was my message that I took on the convoy and hoped to get out to as many people as possible and use it as a platform so that people understood that pipelines is simply a byproduct of the bigger agenda, just like the carbon tax is a byproduct of a bigger agenda. Climate change, again, it's just a mechanism used to fulfill the funding needs, right? So it's you have to get people to connect those dots, because if they don't, then we're going to have these regional pockets where we're protesting, micro-protesting these particular issues and byproducts of the bigger agenda, but we're not dealing with the bigger agenda that's going to solve all these problems. And again, it's the UN Sustainable Development Agenda. That's the head of the snake. That's the beast. And then all its kids, all its byproducts, are things that wake people up, frustrate people, anger people, and destroy our economy in different regions, whatever that issue is. But that's what we have to do to unite, because we won't unite if we're all micro protesting all these issues that affect each region. We actually have to identify what's creating these issues, relate it back to the head of the snake, and then we can unite as a country to save our country, retain our sovereignty and protect it, and make these policies in Canada for Canadians instead of having some unelected foreign body creating policies, cookie cutter policy for the planet. And so if we can do that, that's always been the mission and will remain the mission. Whether it's with a political party or a group or whatever, it doesn't matter, or on my own, that's the message, is it's bigger than you. It's bigger than this particular issue. It's part of the head of the snake, and it affects everybody across the board, you know, in different ways, but it affects everybody.
Yeah, it's a really massive thought process for most people to begin to understand. That's the problem, you know, is we start talking about this and people are just kind of like clueless. They don't understand because they don't take the time to look into this stuff. And you're right, the United Nations should be expelled from all Canadian activities. The People's Party of Canada was on that direction, on that path. I'm still reeling from the election, too. I'm convinced of the fact that the election was rigged. I've looked at lots of different reports from lots of different areas. We looked at the polls of the amount of people that absolutely despised Justin Trudeau prior to this election, and here he is back again. So right. To think that we're living in a free society, I would push back against that. I think we're living in a complete controlled fascist dictatorship, but we don't see it yet. It's there underlying, but we don't see it.
I think the establishment is all part of it. I honestly don't believe, first of all, Scheer, for instance, he's just a figurehead. He's a puppet. It doesn't matter what person or who you put in as leader of that party. It doesn't matter. The party is committed to the direction
they've
taken it. It doesn't matter. They're going to go more to the left if they can. It's they're committed. They're 100% on board with the UN, the Sustainable Development Agenda, all of it. So they're controlled opposition. They're not opposition. They say what people want to hear, and to try to convince them that, yes, we're the strong opposition. When they're not. Everyone knows they're not strong opposition. They didn't oppose any of the big issues. I mean, right down to the Paris Accord they agreed to. So they're controlled opposition. So our whole establishment is part of that, I believe. It's all part of a shell game. And this isn't only in Canada. You see Republicans in the States, you know, fighting Trump from the inside, from the deep state. And that's exactly what it is. And you look at Britain. I mean, the conservatives there, they're not conservative. There's nothing conservative about them. They're part of the same globalist plan and agenda. So, you know, we have to get outside this political box that we're in. We have to think critically. We have to try to understand what's going on and understand, you know, like even right now to this very day, I'm not in this to get elected. I don't want to be elected. I never did want to be elected. I didn't want to be part of a political party and active as a candidate. And I'm not doing this to promote the PPC. But at the end of the day, if people understood what was going on, the PPC then becomes the default because it's the only party that stands separate from the establishment, that actually stands for Canadian sovereignty and stands for our freedom and our liberty and our justice and all of the things that we sort of take for granted here in Canada is what they stand for, which is why I joined them. And so it's not a political thing. For me, it's a means to an end. Right. And so people, you know, at the end of the day, I keep saying, and we've created a think tank because to my knowledge and to anyone's knowledge, there isn't a think tank in Canada that represents this issue of the UN and Sustainable Development Agenda on global governance. So we've created an entity called the Forum for Canadian Sovereignty, and we have some pretty influential, pretty smart folks that are coming on board. And so we're hoping that we can take that and use it as a means to educate people from a nonpartisan perspective, right? So it doesn't matter what party you've voted for or supported for, even to this very day. If you understand the issues and then, you know, help us and we're going to get out. We want to do a national tour with people like Salim Mansour, with Patrick Moore, with James Taylor out of the Heartland Institute and, you know, other folks that understand sustainable development agenda, that understand climate change, that understand the scam and that can join us and that we can do a national tour. And then from that, we want to create regional groups under the same banner. Nonpartisan that can take this message to smaller areas, to smaller towns that we couldn't reach on a national level. And so that's what we're hoping to achieve by creating this entity so we can take the education, the information to the folks. And of course, there are PPC people involved in it because at the end of the day, if people understood what was happening, then the default then becomes the PPC because we're the only party that stands against it. But it's bigger than that. We then have people hopefully across the political spectrum that are starting to understand what their parties have tried to sell to them and give opposition to that because right now there is no opposition to it. Not in government. In government, we have the establishment, all of which have agreed to this. So there is no opposition to it in government. So anything we're watching that comes from government right now, whether it's, you know, somebody in the Conservative Party somehow opposing something that the Liberals are doing, it's all window dressing. It doesn't mean anything. It's all just a farce.
Yeah, I agree. So we got a monumental task on our hands right now because all the programming that's in our society now can't be deprogrammed overnight.
Nope.
The way we're going to do this, Mark, like you said, is through conversations. What you're talking about, this group that you've formed, I would love to get involved in something like that and take it to my local people. And I think that's a great idea because the change is going to come at home. The change is going to come at your local levels. You get people involved. And you get people actually involved in municipal elections because anybody that knows about municipalities, it's just an extension of the government.
Yep.
So they'll never work in your best interest. So people got to take that back. Take back some municipalities with people of like mind. You'll see change come in our society. But the change is going to start at home.
Absolutely it is. And that's, you know, I've managed to recruit some folks out of Alberta to join this think tank or forum. And so they're already working towards making presentations at a local level, at a local town hall. And I mean, that's fantastic. And that's exactly the model that we're looking for. So we can get, you know, groups that can present the message, present the information in a way that's receivable. Because as we spoke about a little bit earlier, if you come at people, especially in a setting like a town hall where you're actually dealing with people on the ground, and you come at them too hard and too fast, yep, they're going to walk out because it's just, it's too much to absorb. So you have to, we have to control the message. We have to, you know, it's incremental. It's not like, whoa, here it all is. What do you think? We have to do it smart. You have to do it in a way that is receivable. And so that's sort of the plan moving forward. And hopefully, you know, that'll inspire and help other groups start and do their thing, whatever it is that their thing is. And,
maybe your group will let me get involved.
Yeah, absolutely. No question about it, Barry.
I could see myself getting involved in, because it's a way of educating the public. It's the biggest, yep, obstacle we have right now is to get through to people. Without scaring away, yeah, you're right. I said it earlier. You can't come at them hard because most people haven't gone down the rabbit holes. There's still people in our society that still think planes took down 3 buildings in New York. Unfortunately, until we can get them on a ground level where they're actually looking at some of this information. If you come at them real hard and tell them what you know, yep, you're just going to scare them away. You're going to lose their attention.
Absolutely.
So I'm open to coaching on that, Mark.
Mm. Very good. Well, we'll definitely take that discussion further. So right now we're basically, just going through the name search and establishing it as a nonprofit organization. And once we get that done, then we'll have a bank account because we're going to need to raise funds. And so, but we're going to do it properly. We're going to do it, set it up, you know, in a proper way with directors. And then once we get that core established, then we're going to put out a call to members, to people who want to be a member of this group or whatever. And then we can start putting together teams, and then we can start, you know, developing a plan for a national tour, and then looking at, you know, regional town halls and small town halls, these kind of things. So it's there is some time that it's going to take. We're hoping very soon into the new year that we'll be able to announce that we are actually a formal established organization, nonprofit, that can, you know, here's the entity, let's move this thing forward. So
sounds like something a lot of Canadians could run and grab and run with.
Absolutely.
We're all looking for the alternative, right? Yep. The way that it should make an impact on society. And this sounds like a great idea, Mark.
I talked to an individual by the name of Thierry Baudet. He's a politician in Holland, in the Netherlands. And he's leader of a party now, but they started as a forum, and it was a forum for democracy is what the name was. And that's all they did or initially was hosting town halls throughout Holland, educating people on the left and socialism and the UN and its agenda. And so they've managed now in 4 years that they got into parliament, they got elected. They have representation in parliament. They have representation in the Senate. And so they've had some success politically. And so after speaking with him and his people, it really solidified the thought that, you know what, this is what we need to do in Canada. We need to reach the... Because I get frustrated, Barry. I get frustrated going online on my YouTube and my Facebook and talking to the same people all the time. I keep singing to the choir and preaching to the choir, and yes, everybody agrees, and yes, there's value in what I'm doing and what others are doing, but they're still stuck in this echo chamber. So we have to get outside this echo chamber. We have to get to just regular Joe Schmo Canadian, and teach them and be in opposition to what they're hearing, because it doesn't exist. So after I talked to Thierry, you know, I looked at that. And then, of course, you look at the States, and they have a number of different groups that promote an opposition to this. And, I mean, they're so much further ahead in opposing this than we are. But we can learn from these people. We can learn from it and then, you know, put something in that's appropriate for Canada. And so that's what we're doing. That's the idea. And hopefully other groups will crop up as well, because this isn't a competition. And this, like we said earlier, this isn't about ego. This isn't about, you know, I want to be the leader or something, because I don't. I just want to I want to run my business and just enjoy my life and make sure my kids have something to, you know, have the same standard of living and experience that I did, right, and my grandkids. So it's way bigger than me. It's just something has to be done, and I think this is one way of getting that message out and educating people. So,
well, really knowing what we know now, Mark, we can't sit still.
No, we can't.
It's not in us to do that, because we realize what's at stake for our children and the future of the country. And it's absolutely imperative right now that we get this message across.
Well, it's either that, Barry, or I give up and move to the Yukon and live in the bush the rest of my days. You know, because I can't live in it and not do anything about it.
That would be the last choice for me, and I'm prepared to do that one day, Mark. I've been in the bush all my life, so. Right. Going and surviving in the bush wouldn't be monumental path at this point in my life. But anyway, I hope it doesn't get to that point.
Well, that's just it. And so,
because we got children, I got children and grandchildren that are going to live in this country, and I see what's coming.
Exactly.
And you know what, buddy? Honest to God, sometimes I'll walk into a mall and I'll see a little child in a stroller, and I almost shed tears.
Yeah.
Because what we're dealing with right now is so monumental, and it's such a threat to what our way of life and what we consider dear. Yep. Everything that we love, everything that we've loved growing up, is that threat right now. We've got to get this across.
Well, and that's, you know, when the UN calls the latest one in 2015, the one that Harper signed us on to, when they call it the UN Sustainable Development Agenda, transforming our world, they mean it, right? This is what transforming our world looks like when we see, you know, families being torn apart in Alberta and Saskatchewan because the energy industry has gone in the toilet and all other industries are going in the toilet, and people are, you know, $200 from insolvency across the country on average. I mean, this is transforming our world, right? This is what that means. This is what we're heading towards, and we're heading toward it very quickly. So, I mean, I have to fight against it. I can't not do anything. It's just not my DNA. And I know there's a lot of people just like me. And there's a lot of people like us, Barry, that have that, but they don't even understand what's happening, right? So those are the people we need to reach.
We do. We've got to make them realize just what they're up against and what the future holds. Don't stop this madness, right?
Yep.
And we had a chance in this last election, and like I said, I believe it was great. I don't know if we'll ever be able to prove that, Mark, but there's a lot of fishy things going on in that election.
Yeah, there is, but, you know, I look at it. When I look at the election, I actually, you know, I try to look at it from a positive perspective because I need some positivity coming from it. And really, at the end of the day, there's 300,000 people that voted for something different. They voted for sovereignty. They voted for freedom. They voted for, you know, all these things we cherish. So there's 300,000 people, which isn't a small amount of people. And so there's that. And the other takeaway for me is, I was given a platform, as others like me were as well, to actually educate a whole lot more people. And I'm telling you, Barry, from the time I started with the PPC to this very day, I have seen the growth of the narrative and the message of globalism being terrible for us. I've seen that grow exponentially on social media. So there is success. There is a boatload of success, and we have to, you know, take that success and move forward and make it more success. And as we move forward, it'll build exponentially. So I have hope.
Pedal to the metal, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, listen, Mark, we're down the last couple of minutes. You know, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on today. I really enjoy our conversations, and I look forward to our next one in the near future. Why don't you tell people about your little talk on, I think it's Friday nights, Saturday nights you do it.
Yeah, so
where they can hear you talk, man.
Yeah, I had the first one on Saturday, and I didn't promote it or anything because it was just a thought that came to mind after the whole attack on Cherry, and really I see a great
label for a show. Talkie Night in Canada, guys.
Talkie Night in Canada. I mean, there's a lot of people frustrated with hockey and Hockey Night in Canada, and they, you know, they want a different option. So I said, you know what, Saturday night's a good night to do that. Let's call it Talkie Night in Canada, and we'll go from there.
Great thought, buddy. Okay, listen, Mark, thanks again for joining me. We're going to take a break here for about 3 or 4 minutes, and I'll be back with Ron Stevens. We're going to talk some more about the United Nations and some of the stuff he wants to bring to our attention. Thanks again, Mark, for joining me.
I appreciate it.
Okay, buddy, have a great day.
All Take care.
Okay, folks, I'll be back in about 3-4 minutes. Not exactly how long I'll be gone, but I know I've got to go empty my bladder. And I'll be back with Ron Stevens back in a couple minutes. Welcome back to Second Hour, folks, and great conversation with Mark. Always enjoy having him on, and I'll get him back here in the near future. I'm joined by one of my other favorite people to talk to, and that's Ron Stevens. How you doing, Ron? Welcome to the Big Puzzle. I haven't talked to you, what, in about 2 weeks?
Yeah, maybe.
It's been a long time, buddy. So what's your pet peeve today, Ron?
Well, I don't have a pet peeve. I had a really good guest on my show today from Calgary, Karen Draper, who's going to put on a thing, a three-day thing in January, an open house kind of thing at a community center. So she got it for 3 days. And, you know, she's a young lady who did what most people don't do, and that is ask a few questions and then went and looking for answers. And she's become extremely knowledgeable over the last few years. And time to get that knowledge out to the rest of the people. So I'm really looking forward to what she's doing in Calgary. Hopefully we can you know, duplicate it and move it to other towns and cities across the country. But after the show today, well, actually 15 minutes ago, I just went and clicked on the news. And I see that that Mark Carney, who's a Canadian again, I mean, if people understood how many Canadians are involved in the takedown of our country and the world, they would be up in arms. Now, Mark Carney was the governor of the Bank of Canada. He's now the governor of the Bank of England. He holds three citizenships, Canada, England, and Ireland. And he's been UN Secretary General, I can't pronounce this, Antonio Guterres or whatever his name is, who's the Secretary General of the UN, made the announcement that, let's see, in Madrid on Sunday, that Carney will be now acting as serving as a UN Special Envoy on Climate. And he will be the one in charge of the money being spent to eradicate the 1.5. Oh, my God, the world ended. So he's going to be the guy who is going to be reaching into everybody's pocket and taking their labor out of their pocket in order to continue with this fraud of global warming.
When you say 1.5, Ron, you're firstly referring to the amount of carbon that Canada is actually
1.5 degrees Celsius, and the world ends.
Well, yeah, but they're saying, buddy, that it's going to go to, you know, 3.2 degrees by the year 2100. Okay, and us all the money that we're going to spend, the trillions that we're going to spend, is going to offset that by 0.2 degrees.
Yeah.
So that's a great investment. We're talking about trillions and trillions of dollars. Basically the destruction of the middle class. Well, they don't ever, you know, one of the things that I find kind of funny, Ron, is they don't talk about the actual real change in climate that the Earth experienced between 1900 and 1940, where our temperature went up by 0.45 degrees for a 20-year period and then subsided. They'll never talk about that. Carbon didn't have nothing to do with that. It was a natural occurrence, my friend.
Rachel Carson, who wrote in 62, which became the Environmentalist Bible. Rachel Carson also wrote a book in 1958 called The Sea Around Us, which you will never, ever, ever hear an environmentalist mention, because Rachel Carson did some investigation and went back in history, just like you're talking about. And this was a late 1900s into the beginning of the, in the late 1800s into the early 1900s, where the ice all melted. And the fishermen got concerned because they couldn't find the fish, because fish live in a pretty narrow temperature band. Mm-hmm. So they went looking, and they found that the deep sea currents had warmed up, because this is all natural cycles, and melted the ice, not from above, but from below, which is the same cycles we have today. I mean, Suzuki came out and said that, oh my God, look at global warming, you know, the salmon run stopped. Well, no, that was a deep sea currents again, because the same thing happened on the East Coast with the cod. The cod disappeared. They said they were fished out. But when I talked to some people down there a year or so ago, they got more damn cod than they know what to do with, because we're moving into a cooling cycle now. So the fish are moving back into those areas. And Suzuki, who said, oh my God, you know, the salmon's gone, a few years after that, maybe 10, we had one of the biggest salmon runs in history. So it's all cyclical. And anybody that thinks that we have the capacity to change climate needs to have their head examined. I mean, if you get on a plane, there's 7 billion people or whatever on the Earth. That's the UN numbers, which can't trust them at all. But even if the number is right, if you get up on a plane and you go up 10,000 feet or whatever, or 20,000 feet and fly around, you're not even going to see any people. That's how minute we are. We don't have the capacity. But, you know, as the Club of Rome said, we came up with the idea of using this. And it's the same thing as Warburg said in 1950. We need a mechanism. We need a global problem that can only be solved at the global level. And they came up with using environment. And we know that was what they were using, because in 1958, a movie came out, a Hollywood, which was called Goddess on Chain. And, I mean, if you watch that, I have a clip on my YouTube, and probably on my blog of it. I put a small clip in there, and it was a movie that was made. You have the actors who are the scientists, and then the goddess of weather and whatnot. They're all cartoon characters. And, you know, in that little clip in 1958, they said that, you know, if we don't cut the CO2 emissions, that Miami will be under 100 feet of water, and people will be going, tourists will be going down there in glass-bottom boats to view the towers, Miami underwater, which, of course, are a lot higher now than they were in 1958. Complete and total fraud. But it's the old story. Create a big lie, repeat the hell out of it until people
will believe it. Believe it.
Yeah, until they believe it.
We program them right from birth to accept the lie, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what they've done. Everything we've ever been told is a lie, Ron.
But yeah,
to get people to understand that, to deprogram society is our monument task. You can't deprogram something that's been programmed for 40 or 50 years overnight. It's a slow process.
Yeah. And there's something really interesting here, because Mark Carney, where's what I'm looking for here? I mean, he's got a wicked history. And, you know, it's really funny, because these people usually come out of Harvard or Yale, and Carney went to Harvard. Then he also went to Oxford. And Oxford, in England, if you look at that, it's really a Marxist school. Bob Ray went to Oxford, and I forget, there's different schools there at Oxford, but I forget what her first name is. They have a mascot turtle there, named after Rosenberg, who's a Marxist. So this is the schooling. Most of these people come out of Yale, Harvard, and then end up over at Oxford, which is what Carney did. He went to Harvard, and then he went to Oxford. Okay, let's go back up here real quick. So he worked for Goldman Sachs for a long, long time in Boston, London, New York, Tokyo, and Toronto. Where's what I'm looking for here? Anyways, this is just another, he was a builder. He went to Bilderberg twice, and our present governor of the bank, Posey or whatever his name is, who also went to Bilderberg. I mean, but we have so many Canadian actors working against us, it's off the charts.
Yeah, it's always to get people to understand that, Ron.
Well, that's the difficult part.
You start talking like that to normal Canadians, and they'll look at you like you're a nutcase. But
well,
you're kind of psychotropic drug.
It's kind of funny. I don't know if you saw that thing I put on your Facebook site or not, but I was trying to put a little humor into it. But the right pages didn't put it up. Now, Jason Kenney's been to Bilderberg twice, and then he was hooked up with Freeland on this North American financial outfit. And I put in that, you know, that Kenny was going to save Alberta by franchising the Bilderberger globally, which would create tens of thousands of jobs in Alberta. And I was just farting around with it, but I had the other stuff connected to my blog, but they wouldn't put it up. So when I, you know, I had this thing from before with where Kenny met Freeland in Edmonton to discuss common ground. So I just put in brackets between common and ground, common UN globalist corporate ground. And amazing, the right side pages that I sent it to actually put it up. And it's popping people's heads because they can't deny it, right? There it is. It's all in your face. You cannot deny it. And they're having head problems right now about
Jason's Alberta. Jason Kenney's connection to Krista Freeland. I mean, come on.
Study
what that woman's all about, man. She's one of the most evil entities to ever walk the face of the earth. I can't say that, but she's not a very nice
person. You can. She's evil and ugly.
Okay. I can say that, but...
I think we're allowed to say that.
Now.
Well, she's white.
She's
white, so we can say whatever we want about her. If she was something else, we wouldn't be able to do that. This is really dangerous because in here somewhere that I'm looking at, this is all hooked up to the World Economic Forum, which is part of it, which I think they call it G30 now, the Group of 30, which is hooked up to the World Economic Forum. And it was this is why Carney's in this position now. Because, I don't know, it was June or July, the UN cut a deal with the World Economic Forum to help them move the Sustainable Development Goals forward, which one is climate change. And the guy who started or is in charge of the World Economic Forum also is the guy who created the public-private partnerships. And so it's really interesting because in The Cloak of Green, the book published in 1995 by Elaine Dewar, who was just asked to go and do a short story for Saturday Night Magazine regarding this thing in the Amazon, when she got there. And this is what's so important about asking questions. She could have just went there and wrote the little story and handed it in. But when she got there and she sees Elizabeth May and David Suzuki and this guy from the Amazon jungle, and he's wearing a Rolex watch and stuff, and she's looking around and she's something's not right here. And she started asking questions of herself, which leads you to go find the answers. So that short story turned into a 4-year investigative report, which completely blows the environment out the window because it connects all these corporations to it,
right?
Which is what David Rockefeller, I think it was 1991, said something has to take the place of government, and business seems to be the obvious entity to do it. So now we have the UN signed an agreement with the World Economic Forum And in the Cloak of Green, it mentions the World Economic Forum, and it mentions that they had $3 trillion to spend. Well, now, when they did this agreement this year, the number now is $7 trillion. So between the $7 trillion and the public-private partnerships, and you see what's going on, okay, your hospitals are losing their doctors and their nurses, and your schools are falling apart, and all our infrastructure is going in the toilet here. Meanwhile, they're trying to build light rapid transit systems and that, but you're spending money on this, but you don't have any money for your hospitals. You don't have any money for this or that or this or that. And this is all being set up on purpose so that these multinational corporations can come in and be the saviors, so to speak, which is basically taking over our nation so that you're under corporate global rule. And people have to understand that. And people need to go to the World Economic Forum and look at the partners. Okay? You have to know who these people are, who these corporations are. And it's the same thing with Kenny, that North American Economic Forum that him and Freeland and Tobin, who the hell's heard of Tobin lately, right? He's in this constantly. And one of the Rothschilds involved in it. But if you look at their partners, it's the same basic group of people. It's a smaller group that finance these meetings. But there's over 200 people, speakers, at the Montreal meeting in 2019, of which Kenny and Freeland were involved in. And you look at the partners, it just blows your mind, you know. You've got it sponsored by Power Corp, and Des Moraes Jr. is involved in that as a speaker. You've got Denton's, which is the world's largest law firm as per a number of lawyers, both of which Jean Chrétien works for, and so does Stephen Harper. And, I mean, when you look through this, you always see the left and right connected, right? And that's what people have to get their brain around, okay? The left and the right were specifically designed to divide the people.
Create the illusion of freedom.
Right. And so while you're divided and, oh, you're a liberal, oh, you're a conservative, while you're doing this, they have free run to keep implementing their agendas.
Well, yeah, you keep distracting.
Right, have been implementing the agendas.
Well, yeah, you distract the population, and they do that in multiple different ways.
Look,
seems like people are more worried about who won the hockey game than the destruction of their country. Well, this shows you the power of mind control, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, when I had CBC call me after the G20, and they wanted they wanted the rights to use a video that they found on my YouTube because they said they were going to do a serious piece on the G20, and I was kind of happy about that. And I said, "What video are you looking for?" And they said, "Well, you have one where some people are singing 'O Canada,' sitting on the road, and then you get all these riot police behind them." And I said, "Yeah." So when they're done singing, as soon as they finish singing 'O Canada,' these people sitting down get run over from behind by the riot police. What the hell does that have to do with the G20? Absolutely nothing. And you're telling me you're doing a serious piece on it. So if you are, I can get you that video, the rights to use it, but only if you will include these other videos. The video of Paul Martin saying that we all have to give up some of our sovereignty, who was one of the founders of the G20. And Stephen Harper, who stood at the podium at the G20 and said this is a loss of national sovereignty. Some people don't like it, but it's a simple reality. Which was never aired. It was never brought forward in any media in this country. And what CBC said to me when I mentioned the one about Harper, and there's a true story. They said, "Oh, that." I went, "Yeah, that. That was unfortunate, but we wouldn't be interested in that. Can we have that video where the cops run over the singers?" No, not unless you do something else. And I said, I also have a video of Joe Clark at university in California on a panel trying to figure out how to soft shoe the North American Union down our throats. Now, these are three prime ministers who are working against us, but you're not interested in that. No, can we have that other video? And eventually I ended up phoning Harper's office to ask them what was meant by what Harper said at the G20. And I got the same response I got from CBC. Oh, that. Yeah, that. We're not allowed to discuss that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not like they're not interested, Ron. It's what they're allowed to discuss and who controls the media. We know where that one is.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's things that they cannot touch. So whether they're interested in actually just exposing it, I would say it's a good news story, but something they can't touch. And we've got to get rid of this corrupt media in Canada if we're ever going to reach the people, because they're still influencing a great deal of the population in Canada. A lot of people still go to CBC as their source of information.
Well, CBC's actually, people hate CBC, but it's actually really good. I mean, if you can read behind the storyline, it's great. But most people don't do that. They watch fake news. No, not really. It's news, but they give you some of it, and then you got to go check it out, and then you get the real story.
I agree. They give you a little bit of truth.
Yeah. They don't give you the whole story.
Just enough to entice you.
Yeah.
But you've got to, like you said, you've got to go do your own research. You can't be using CBC or CTE or Global or any of the mainstream medias as your source of information.
Yeah, so when I saw this story about Mark Carney being made the UN envoy for climate change financing, that was close to a throw-up moment. You know, I mean, the guy, he worked for Goldman Sachs, which is a bad idea, and then he's hooked up with the World Economic Forum, which is part of the Group of 30, which are all financiers and bankers and whatnot, we got us a real problem.
You know? Hey, Stephen, could you talk with Ron for a second? My dog is at the door whining right now, and if I don't let him out, he's going to pee on the floor, so I've got to step away for 1 minute. Can you guys just carry on for a second, please? I know that's a little abnormal, but I do got to let him out.
No, it's fine.
Okay, I'm just going to be, I'll be back in a minute, guys.
There's, yeah, so anyways, you know, the problem just continues. And the interesting part of the, where is that, the Group of 30? The Group of 30 was founded in 78 by Jeffrey Bell at the initiative of who? The Rockefeller Foundation. Well, there's no surprise. Because Rockefeller also said, you know, the idea is not so much to own anything, but to control everything. And that's what they're trying to do, to get control over every aspect of our lives and control over all the resources on the planet. Because once they have done that, then they got us. Because they're saying that we're using a planet and a half or more of the sustainable development nonsense out of our common future, which was written by who? A Canadian, okay? It was written by a Canadian. And Morris Strong was involved in it, Rockefeller was involved in it, but the main writer of it was a Canadian. I'm trying to remember what his name is right now. But he was also hooked up with the IIDS, which is the International Institute for Sustainable Development. Which is where? In Winnipeg, Canada. I mean, the things people don't know in this country is off the charts. Like Barry said, yo, they'll talk about your hockey game, but they don't know anything else, right? The foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, provided the initial funding for the Group of 30. And it goes on, a bunch of names here. is hooked up with the International Monetary Funding. The current chairman of the Board of Trustees, Jacob Finkel, and Paul Volcker, who's also a financier. So,
isn't the Canadian government building a shiny new United Nations headquarters in Montreal?
Say that again?
I read that the United Nations, Canada, is setting up a brand new United Nations headquarters in Montreal. I read an article about that. Do you know anything about that? One of my...
Well, I know Montreal is a major place in Canada for all of these all these conferences and that. Be it monetary.
Didn't mean to get off subject there. Just something that I read about.
No, that's I think I saw something about that as well. I just can't grab it right now.
You see that British Columbia, Ron? I don't know if you followed this story, but British Columbia is the first province in Canada that has enacted the United Nations Rights for Indigenous People.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I'm trying to understand it. Do you know exactly what that means?
Well, it's splitting up. What they want to do with the Indigenous people is they want the resources on the Indigenous lands. Right, like I remember one time, a long time ago, a guy said, "What the hell's going on here? They've got the universal human rights, and then they have the indigenous rights. Now, are they saying that the indigenous people aren't humans? Or what the hell's going on here?" But this is another offside game that's being played, and then we also have Muslim rights. Okay, so we have three different sets of rights out of the UN. They only ever tell you about the universal human rights, but there's, I forget what that was called, for the Muslims, which was in, yeah, the agreement was in 1990, I think, the declaration. And the Muslims agree 100% with the United Nations human rights, as long as it adheres to Sharia law, right? Which is why we're having Sharia law put into different countries or different communities in the countries, the no-go zones, kind of, so to speak. The United Nations is just, it needs to be put on a rocket or something and sent to Mars.
That's right. Yeah, I agree.
We've got to get him out of here. I mean, this stuff with you know, Trump. Oh, what a great president. Oh, give me a break. I mean, the guy was picked, and that's that. If he was such a great president and cared so much about America, then why is the Trilateral Commission still in business? And why is the United Nations world headquarters sitting on American soil? I mean, if you're gonna take back your country, you better get these guys the hell out of it, which hasn't happened yet. So I don't have a lot of. This is just playing that game again. And what they're doing in the States is they're trying to raise the hate against Trump. Okay, because they had to settle it down for a bit because you had all of the patriots and all that getting uppity when Obama was in, and it was looking a little shaky. So then we settle it down, and then we put the hate out on Trump, and then we get to bring in our what do they call that, the new Green Deal, right? It's quite pathetic, but we're going to fix it, because as people start to understand, Jim McNeil, that was the guy who wrote the Our Common Future. Now, the guy who put the head of the UN, who appointed Mark Carney to be the envoy on climate, who's he? Well, he was the president of Socialist International. And the one from the Our Common Future, who was she? She was the vice president of Socialist International. So we know what the game is, right? And we got, you know, it's like, you know, I put a spell on you.
Well, you just want a whole bunch of people over and shake them wake there when you started talking about Trump. They're all going, we love you, Ron.
Well, they actually get it. They actually get Trump. It.
Well, yeah, I mean, they get it too, and I get it. I've said many times that I'm not a Trump supporter. I like a few things that he's done, but it's being done for a reason.
Exactly.
There's a reason behind everything that's being played out in front of us.
Yeah.
I'm not stupid.
Look here.
But I also go, boy, if Clinton was in right now, I think we'd be having a little bit of a different conversation right now. So whether this is all just a planned agenda, you look at the election, he wasn't supposed to win. You look at the charts, you look at all the polls, she was supposed to be a landslide. That magazine's already made up. The whole plan was for her to be in there. And this guy come along. So is this all part of a major plan? It's a big play if it's being played. But it's probably in their playbook when you look at it.
It's all like magic, right? You know, if you're watching the guy on stage doing magic, you know, he's got you watching over here while he's doing over there, right? I mean, it's all sleight of hand crap, right? And, look here while we're doing this over there. In other words, watch the hockey game.
Well, yeah, distractions in our society. We've talked about that lots of times, Ron. I go to people, you know what? I haven't watched a hockey game now in about 5 years. I love playing the game. There's nothing I love playing more than hockey. Oh. Great game, right? But I'm not going to sit there and watch some guy that's in a different world than I am, getting paid $5 or $6 or $10 million a year, flying around, treated like royalty because they can play a game at a level that most people will never achieve, and I'm going to worship that person? And it just, you know, go away. You know, you're taking the game out of the game. It's a business. It's a distraction. It is a major distraction in society. You look at the Grey Cup. I talk about it. People in Winnipeg are all over the street. Yahoo, we're the best in the world. Yeah. Next day, they're right back to work in the same crap that they were in the day before they won the Grey Cup. It's just a distraction. It makes people feel good for a couple hours, and it's all gone. It never deals with real life consequences. Ron.
No, but I mean,
it's the old
true story. All roads lead to Rome, right? So in Rome, the slaves got to go to the Colosseum on the weekend to watch the games or the slaughters or whatever the hell was going on, and then they go back to what they're doing during the week. The idea of being able to go back to the Colosseum on the weekend keeps their mind off the idea that they're slaves. And for people that don't understand, and I wish people would do this, but most people don't want to read anything anymore. And the globalists write everything down because they're obligated to do so, because this is about consent, and silence is consent. And when you don't read anything, you don't know anything, therefore you remain silent. Which means, in their books, you're consenting to what the hell they're doing to you. But if you go back and you look at Roman slave law, you are looking at the legal system. Now, the Roman slave law and the syntax of the Catholic Church, Rome, if you put those two things together, you have exactly the legal system. Okay, we can't vote, you can't get charged, because you're the slave. And what do? They feed off the slaves. And people say, well, I vote. No, you don't. Okay, when you were born, they seduced your mother into accepting the benefits without disclosing to you what the hell was taking place here. So the government offers the benefits, baby bonus and whatnot. You get to go to school for free if you sign this document. What they didn't tell her mothers was that if you sign this document, the registration form, you've orphaned your children to the state, which they took after that. They plagiarized your name. Okay? They changed it out, similar to like but not. It ain't your name. And that name, that legal person, is in fact the slave owner. Because when in Roman slave law, if I chuck a rock through your window, and there's witnesses, who gets charged? Well, obviously the guy threw the rock. No. No, in Raymond's slave law, Roman slave law, the slave owner who's responsible for the slave gets charged. And same thing in the legal system. Do you get charged for throwing the rock through the window? No. They don't have any authority over you. They didn't create you. Well, who gets charged? The legal person gets charged. Now, only a legal person can register to vote. Well, you're not a legal person. You're a man or a woman. Okay, so you act as the proxy. So we need to break this system. And I've had this conversation with a lawyer from the Attorney General's office who agreed, okay, that law is really simple. And he agreed. You know, I said, let's start with law because it shouldn't take as long to agree on it. And I said, law, from what I understand, is do no harm. And if you do harm, you're obligated to undo the harm.
Say, Barry.
And he agreed with that. And Barry, I said, okay, let's go to the legal system, okay? Most everything in the legal system is sold to us on the idea of safety. Or we need permits for things that we should be able to do anyways. I mean, why do I got to give you money to go fishing, right? So, you know, it's all sold on safety, but if you look at what they're actually doing is they're creating new revenue streams on the idea of safety, which is exactly as the sin tax that they were putting out in Rome when Luther rolled in there, is that when you need more money, you make a new tax. In that case, they were making a sin tax, and this time they're selling you this safety nonsense, which is just another sin tax, because if you don't do as we say, then you're going to go and have to pay money, which they did in Rome. So it's the exact same system.
Yep. Do. Along comes the carbon tax. I think Stephen wanted to ask me a question there. Stephen?
Well, I wanted to add something there, if I could.
What
Ron was talking about a minute ago is the creditor and the debtor. If the creditor is the banks and the corporations that run and own the world, and the debtors are us serfs.
Right. That's exactly right. Now, when I looked up Canada, it was said that Canada, we were given a responsible government. We didn't create a government. It was given to us. Then there was a caveat attached to it that said, but the word responsible in responsible government doesn't have the dictionary meaning of the word responsible. Meaning that the government is not the responsible party. We are, okay? We're the ones that are liable, chargeable, and accountable, not the government, okay? So, again, that makes us serfs, or as the head of one of the divisions of the Attorney General's office, while we were talking, said that, because they were trying to nail me as a sovereign citizen, free man on the land or something, which I said I outed at the very beginning as soon as I seen it. In our last conversation, which is recorded, which I'm going to have to put up sometime, is that he said, you're not a free man on the land. You're just a man with a great deal of knowledge, but you do realize we never left the feudal system. I said, I absolutely understand that, which was kind of weird because they record everything. And when I called back a few weeks later, he's no longer with the Attorney General's office. The same thing happened when I was talking to the senior policy advisor for municipal elections. We talked about 6 months. And the last conversation I had with her, she kind of lost it and went, okay, Ron, okay, I can't verify whether or not the elections are legal or not. Well, thank you. But then when I called back there about a month later, she's no longer employed there, okay, because it recorded everything. I had a lady from the Ontario Energy Board call me because they shut my power off. It's all intimidation. They shut my power off even though bill was paid. Then they stole or threatened to steal the meter off my rental property if I didn't submit to them. The whole thing is ugly, and we have to fix it. And we're going to fix it. because the more of this that goes on, the more people start listening to their gut instead of their mind. Okay, minds are easily manipulated. Your gut feeling is your survival instinct.
Barry.
And more people are starting to listen to their gut because they're starting to, you know, when I used to write stuff 10 years ago, I would get just all this nonsense coming at me, right? I don't get that anymore.
No, they're actually starting to listen, and you're right, Ron. People are starting to really pay attention. Yeah. Well, we had that conversation in the first hour, I notice it now, and I think most people involved getting the truth out there are starting to see the change.
Barry, can I add something else?
Say what, Steven?
Do you mind if I add something else?
Go ahead, bud.
Well, you know, I've heard people all over the internet and all over social media say for years and years now the government needs to honor the Constitution, honor their oath to the Constitution. Well, I'm absolutely sure it's the same way in Canada. And I know I've told you before, Ron more than likely knows this, but they don't swear an oath to the Constitution.
No.
They swear an oath to the corporation, the Constitution of the Corporation of America.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I'm sure it has to be the same way in Canada.
It is in Canada. They swear an oath to the corporation. I mean, when I spoke to another guy from the Attorney General's office at a court that I went to lend support to for a farmer who had been hassled and raided for 20 some years, never caused anybody any harm, and but it's all about corporate control. And when I was talking to the to a high level OPP guy out in Toronto, which is a 2.5 hour drive up to this little courtroom, what are you doing here, right? Well, we know what we're doing there because we're trying to learn stuff. So when I asked the officer, who had a very expensive suit on, I said, you know, is this a corporate or a common law court? He just put his hands up in the air and he looked at me and said, it's all corporate. Well, of course it is. But when I was talking to the AG guy at break, and the cop didn't want me talking to him because I hear this a lot when I'm talking to these people. They go, don't listen to Ron. So the guy says, no, I want to hear what he's got to say. So I took him back through some Canadian history, which goes back to when our forefathers first came here, before there was government. Okay? There was no government when our forefathers came here. Our forefathers came here to get out from under the boot of tyranny, to start a new house. Okay? Over time, the weasels, snakes, and foxes offering benefits after our forefathers died off and a few generations died off after that, they took control of our house again, which we're back under tyranny. But when I spoke to the guy from the AG's office and I took him back through history about the Hudson's Bay Company, and in the States you had the Virginia and the what was the other company called? There was two companies there. Which were the corporations got their foot in the door. But when our forefathers started running into the people from the Hudson's Bay Company, who had their own courts and their own jails, and started telling our forefathers that you can't do this, you can't do that, our forefathers just simply said, we don't work for you, take a hike, you know, when our forefathers had a spine. So they got back to England and said, you know, these people aren't listening to us. We understand you got this legislative thing you set up. How's it working? They don't get it. Great. Can we have one? Certainly. We'll send some people over. Now, the lawyers were working here about 100 years before there was ever such a thing as Canada. And when I took this guy through all the stuff and I said, you know, in reality, Canada is nothing more than a rebranded Hudson's Bay Company. And when the cop came back in, you know, he says, come on, let's go. And the guy from the AG's office said to the cop, you know what? Ron's absolutely correct. Canada is nothing more than a freaking rebranded Hudson's Bay Company, the corporation. And everyone, the military, the police, the politicians, all take an oath to serve the corporation. Same thing in the United States. because it went from America, it was America, and then it became the United States.
Yes, yes. You see, the oath should go, I, Donald J. Trump, do solemnly swear to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America. But the recordings go back at least that I can find to Franklin Roosevelt. And what each and every one of them say is, I solemnly swear to uphold the Constitution of the United States. And they omit the of America. And that's how they get their out.
Yep. And, you know, here we take an oath to serve the Queen. Okay. And people say, well, the Queen's got nothing to do with Canada. Well, yeah. Right? The Queen's the head of the corporation. I mean, if you go through this, who's the Prime Minister? The Prime Minister is the head of the board, because that all is the corporate board, serving the Queen.
Barry, if you want to think about it, Donald Trump is the president of the Corporation of America. That's all he is.
Yeah. Exactly. And our Prime Minister is the head of the board of the corporation known as Canada. Simple as that. You know, and when the guy from AGs is saying we never left the feudal system, which is exactly correct, because if you look at the feudal system, you have the kingdom, which is broken up. You have the whole kingdom, who's in charge, somebody's in charge of that, which is the feds. And then you have the provinces or the states, which are broken up. The kingdom is broken up into smaller pieces, but these are all tax collectors, and then it's broken up into counties and municipalities and that. It is exactly the same thing as the feudal system, right? Which they tried to break in the 1200s during King John's time, when the barons were getting pressured from the people because of their ever-increasing taxes, and they put their finger on what the problem was, and they pointed at the lawyers, and they decided to go get them. And they went out and killed a pile of them, and the rest of them ran away. So they got John to sign the Magna Carta. And when they came back, the lawyers, they said, we got to go get these SOBs. And John says, no can do, because they signed this. And they said, well, they looked at it, and they said, well, no, this doesn't hold any water because you signed it under duress. And then the Pope also said the same thing. It's void. It has no authority whatsoever. But yet they held that up in front of people for 800 years as this great document of freedom, which it wasn't, because it was never in play. So we've been deceived for, well, a very long time. You know, I saw a video of a lady. I have a video on my YouTube of a lady from America who was just shook to the core. And she was standing on a stage on an outdoor event of some sort, and she had just come to the conclusion, this is quite some time ago, she just come to the conclusion that it's a corporation. The United States is a corporation, which means we're assets of the corporation. And she was so broken up by this thought process, you know, home of the free and the brave, and we're just assets of a freaking corporation.
That's called blown paradigm, Ron.
It's which?
I said that's called a blown paradigm.
Yeah, yeah. And she was just shook to the core. And she's a lady probably in her early 50s or something. And she'd spent her whole life believing the lies. And then the truth hit her in the head. And that's what we need to do. We need to just keep talking and teaching, and to the point where we have enough people. And then we don't have to get into a fight. All we got to do is stand up and say no. And people have to understand just how strong that word is. It's just like our forefathers when the Hudson's Bay Company said, you got to bow down to us. And they said, no, don't think so. But then over generations got suckered back into the same system again. But, you know, what's broken can always be fixed, you know. And we have the capacity and the ability to fix it. We just got to bring the people together.
I guess it comes down to whether we can fix stupid or not.
Well, you know,
it's just a thought, Ron. But anyway,
well, you know, I always go back to Luther, because the people when he got to Rome were pretty stupid, you know, and he woke them up.
Right? Well, maybe that's what's going to take in our society.
Because if it hadn't been for Luther, our forefathers wouldn't have come here. They understood what was going on, and they wanted to get out from under it. The only way to get out from under it was leave. The problem is we don't have anywhere to go to now. There's no land to go to, so we're going to have to stand ground.
Yeah, and one of the things I like about having you in is that every time you come in, I get a history lesson because I don't have the capacity in my brain to retain all the information that you do as far as history goes. So it's great because I always learn something every time you talk. I'm just an old bald-headed fart out here in British Columbia with common sense.
I'm the same age as you, Frank.
You studied it for years and you really put it together and make it easy to understand. You cross the T's and dot the I's for us.
Well, as I said today on my show, I said I think I started asking questions the day the doctor hit me on the ass.
If you can remember that, buddy, then I've got a lot of respect for you. But we're down to the last couple of minutes here.
I really enjoy coming on your show. I got to tell you, I really, truly do.
It's always a good conversation. But we only got a couple of minutes here, so why don't you tell people, are you still doing where you do your shows and where they can follow you?
I do my show every Sunday from noon till 2 on RevolutionRadioFreedomSlips.com. And, we're working on a new websites and that, which we're going to call Reset in Motion. We've already got the company in that because it is Reset in Motion time. It is the second basic reformation. And the Reformation 1 was just simply about truth, and we have to get the truth out. I didn't want to call it Reformation 2 because that's too close to Vatican 2, so we're going to call it Reset in Motion. And the motion has already begun, and people are becoming less fearful, more knowledgeable, and more determined. And that's how we win. Simple as that. It's all about attitude, and we have to change our attitudes, and we got to realize that regardless of how dumbed down our population is, our forefathers' blood is still coursing through everyone's veins. We just have to reactivate it.
Absolutely. Violence is consent. It's time to look at the mirror and ask yourself what kind of a legacy will be in the future.
Yeah.
And if you look there and you don't see what you want to see, then it's time to change it. Because if you don't change it wrong, I believe that eventually good will prevail over evil. But if we don't stop it right now, we're going to see a lot of evil perpetrate it. Self across this planet, because we see it everywhere. It's undeniable what we see right now going on the globe. So, all that being said, we're in interesting times right now, exciting times, and dangerous times. And, it's great having you in. It was great having Mark in to hear lots of different perspectives from you. So thanks for joining me today, buddy. It's always a good conversation.
Okay, you guys take care. It was fun.
Yeah, it was a good show, guys. And that's it for this week, folks. I'll be back next week, same time, same place. And I promise to have a good show for you. Or good try anyways. Thanks to Ron for joining me, and thanks to Mark for serving. Thanks again to Stephen for producing my shows. And thanks for joining me today. Have a great week. God bless you all, and I'll see you next week. Same time, same place. Bye-bye.
Take care, guys.